Gentlemen, we're already late on the hour. We welcome you to the Ways and Means Subcommittee for General Government. We are hearing Senate Bill 5524. Today is set for a public hearing, after which we'll have a work session at the end of this session. Because I'll be in and out today, I am passing the gavel to Representative Jeff Krupp. We've agreed that he would be treated with proper amount of respect and decorum. And
sorry, what that means, Mr. Chair.
Well, that's because I'm not wearing leather. this is the subcommittee of the subcommittee until we can get at least two members of the Senate and three members of the House. However, your testimony will become part of the record and is very important to us. We have a rather substantial list of those who will testify today. We'd ask you to try not to repeat the other testimony which is given. However, we would ask you to go ahead and give full testimony. We do need your name and where you're from at the very beginning, and speak clearly into the microphone so that our clerk, Ms. Jamie Penn, can hear you and keep the recording proper for the state transcript. Our legislative fiscal officer today is Katie Cannon. We welcome Katie, and we'll go now passing the gavel officially to Representative Krupp, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we get started, there's one rule we need to talk about that was instituted by our esteemed chairman, and that is that pink little piggy bank up front there. That represents the American Cancer Society. And every time you use an acronym, instead of actually saying the word, you're welcome to put 25 cents in there. Now, the only exception is if you actually use that acronym, pitch yourself, and speak out the entire word. And then we'll have grace. We send grace. Anyway, we really do appreciate you taking the time out of your busy lives to come here today and share your thoughts with us. We do thank you for that. And at this time, we would like... You going to come later? Okay. Well, at this time, we'll begin taking public testimony.
Open up the public hearing.
And we're going to open up the public hearing, and he is here to assist me, even when I'm not wearing gloves. Not the
No, it isn't. It's part of the truth, all.
It was on camera, as a matter of fact.
That's enough.
Well, why don't we start with... Okay. Why don't we start with the Eugene, Oregon Disabled Committee? If you'd like, please come up to the microphone and state your name for the record.
I'll turn this off. My name is Eugene Oregon, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Disabilities Commission. I'm appearing this afternoon in support of the funding package for the state library, but I also have a couple of concerns that I would like to share with you. Our commission has always been supportive of the Talking Book and Braille service, which the library has provided for a number of us over the course of the years. And I'd like to spend a couple of minutes taking off my executive director's hat and talking about services that the, Talking Book and Braille Service.
You're doing very well, Eugene. Very well indeed.
Anyway, while I was a graduate student and postgraduate student at the University of Oregon, I was able actually to get some text support from the Talking Book and Braille Service. That's not their primary function, but it just so happened that my field was so weird that they were able to find books that I needed in their collection. I also have had the opportunity to be a recreational reader with that service. One of the things I failed to mention, in case you folks don't know, is I am legally blind also. I was that before I inherited the wheelchair, and now I have multiple sclerosis, which requires the wheelchair until you have a legally blind driver in your hands. It's a totally different committee. New transportation committee.
Well, Eugene, I must share with you, I sit on that committee also. You are.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Anyway, a couple of years ago, my eldest daughter was diagnosed with a learning disability. She has a condition, which I call, don't fully understand, but as she looks at a page of written material, the words change for her, and she was not real receptive to the idea that I had, that we only had to buy her one book ever, because the ending was always going to change. And she did not find that funny, and instead she went to the Talking Book and Braille service and became eligible for their services. She was able to obtain any number of fiction works that she was using in literature classes in high school, was able to finish high school, is now a certified nurse's aide, and is planning to embark on an RN course within the next couple of years. She will probably be back to Talking Book and Braille Service again. I offer all of these examples because I think the service that program that the State Library provides is very, very valuable. Earlier in the session, I wrote a memorandum to each legislator, and I discussed what I foresaw as a fear that budgets would be balanced on the backs of or the most vulnerable people. Certainly people with disabilities are a part of that. I wrote the memorandum thinking predominantly about the Department of Human Resources. Obviously that department has the most crisis-oriented services, I would say, for vulnerable populations. That's a hard word to say for me. Obviously my commission was included. Now I think I would add Talking Book and Braille service. This service is available to people throughout the state, people who are blind, people with other disabilities that affect the ability to read, and it, in many instances, is the only link with information outside of their homes. And I would urge this committee to hold the Talking Book and Braille service budget harmless in terms of reductions, because I think it is very minuscule, and I think it is an extremely important service provided to people in Oregon. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Oregon at this time?
I just have a quick one for you. How do you personally utilize the Talking Book?
I'm eligible participant, and I have a tape recorder. She listens to four track books, and I receive them periodically. I send in a list every so often that is incredibly long. And I get a few at a time, and sometimes it'll be a year before I get a book that I've requested, and I'll get it, and I'll think, what mood was I in today that I ordered this one? But, and that's true, with, I think, with any kind of order. But that's what I'm able to do with the service. It's very valuable.
Well,
should we have
thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
I have one other thing, Mr. Chair. I'm also speaking to the Vocational Rehabilitation Division today. I had a conversation with them just before coming here, and they said, please add our concerns about the potential losses to the Talking Book and Braille service, because it's important for clients that they serve as well as the individuals that we represent.
Thank you, and you did marvelously well not putting any money into the piggy bank.
It wasn't easy. Let me just
let forth of all of us that have been dragged in.
Well, we thank you. Okay, we would call forth this time Phyllis, is it Eichenstein? Nick Eichenstein, my apologies. That's why, Phyllis, if you notice under my name how it's spelled.
I'm not going to say talking hooks and grills.
Well, we thank you very much, and the American Cancer Society.
I do support the American Cancer Society as great. Well as talking hooks and grills. Their pursuit of and members of the committee. I want to thank you. I am Phyllis Lichtenstein. I live here in Salem. I'm a past member of the State Library Board of Trustees and was chair 2 years ago. I currently serve as chair of the Development Committee for the Talking Books and Braille Services. But from now on, it's TBAS. Briefly, to sketch the history of this committee, the concept of a fund development committee, of fund development rather, for TBAS emerged in April of 1994 when a recommendation was made to research the possibility of doing this. In March of 1996, a retreat led by consultants from C3 Strategies, which is a consulting firm which specializes in helping nonprofit organizations raise funds, was held to begin the process of developing such a committee. Organizational resources were set up, and C3 Strategies provided temporary or short-term staffing for the purpose of getting this all started within the organization. The first fund development officer consultant was hired in January of 1998, and since July of 1997, donation income has reached a total of $168,225, with an additional $20,587 in interest accumulated to bring the total to $188,812. Combined with other donations, the present balance of the donation fund is $285,252. And just so that we understand one another, as stated in ORS 357.015, paragraph 6, the trustees of the State Library have control of, use, and administer the State Library donation fund for the benefit of the State Library, except that every gift, device, or bequest for a specific purpose shall be administered according to its terms. From the first, it was determined that one of the goals of fund development was to provide for present programs in the enhancement of and for the addition of new programs. To that end, money has been made available for the purchase of descriptive videos, first as a pilot program, and then as it proved so popular, the addition of a great number of new titles. There was also a pilot program in determining whether or not it would be feasible to provide commercially made tapes. The tapes that we generally use, as Mr. Orkin described, are a specially made four-track tape, and they come to us from the National Library Service. In 1999, during Braille Literacy Month, we provided print Braille books. They're books that are both in print and in Braille so that a parent, a sighted parent, can read with a sight-impaired child. And these were provided to all of the public libraries who wish to participate. We've also covered the cost of solicitation from the donation funds. While some money was designated for the hiring of temporary help, temporary workers to supplement staff hours, this is not an intended use of the money. It has been recommended by the TBAS Advisory Council that no new funds for this purpose will be made available from donations, and this is in keeping with the expressed concerns of donors and patrons and I believe you have a copy of a letter from a patron. Actually, it's the caregiver of a patron, Janice Green, on this subject, and we have addressed her concerns. It was also a major concern that the ability to ensure that the quality and variety of TBAT services should continue into the future. To that end, it was decided to establish an endowment fund. I should like to quote from a policy for an endowment fund for Talking Books and Braille services that was approved by the State Library Board of Trustees on August 19, 1997. The purpose of the Talking Book and Braille Library Endowment Fund is to assure a long, strong future for TBAS by building an additional source of income that will supplement the federal contribution, the state general fund, and other donations in funding TBAS to achieve its service objectives and the goals in any current TBAS long-range plan. I think I used some of my knowledge words right there. The clear intent of this policy and the statement made to our donors is that this money is not to be used for day-to-day operations. The need to ensure that this policy is adhered to was recently brought home to us by Steve Klein, who's a representative from the National Library Service, and they are the providers of materials, equipment, and free postage for our program. They're very integral to our program. He pointed out the limits of the service they can provide, which we must find the means of supplementing. He also looked to future changes in technology, which are being anticipated, and among these is the digitalization of materials. In time, this will affect our need for additional funds. Another goal of the TBAS Development Committee is to extend the services of TBAS to the unserved segment of the eligible population. Currently, only 7,000 of a potential 46,000 print-disabled population. And I'd like to take just a minute to explain what we mean by print-disabled. It's not just the legally blind. The legally blind, it's anyone with visual impairment, sufficient enough for a doctor's recommendation to TBAB. It's the dyslexic, those with other learning disabilities that would also, you could possibly use the service. It's the physically handicapped who can't hold print or use print material. So it's a wide range of people. But out of the 46,000 that we have determined would be eligible for the service, only about 7,000 are currently being served. And that number is destined to increase as the elderly, the number of elderly swell. Right? I am with my gray hair. The staff, volunteers, patrons, and families of patrons or TBAS look to you to preserve this service that has become a means, and I quote from their letters, of making life worthwhile. We, the members of the Development Committee, look to you to keep safe with our donors. These last are most often our patrons and their families who are willing to show their gratitude for this, quote, free service by giving again and again. I want to thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. That's certainly very compelling testimony. Any questions?
I'm sorry.
I'm happy
to answer any of
that. All right. That's fine. Thank you very much. And thank you for the donation to the piggy bank. All right. Next on the list would be Bill Cunningham. Welcome, sir. We appreciate you coming today. Please state your name for the record.
I'm Bill Cunningham from Portland. I'm the current chair of the Talking Book and Braille Services Advisory Committee, and I've been a user of this program for over 30 years. In the main thrust of my comments are to indicate to you, perhaps in a Well, that's an effective way. There's a lot of emotion connected with the high degree of value that this is to me and has been. I cannot read newspapers, books, my ordinary mail. The types of information I get on television and newspapers is more the headline and banner type. So when I'm interested in a particular subject that may be developed to a great extent in a book, I have no access other than the Talking Book Service. This library that we have in Oregon is unique since it's the only one like it that serves over, well, the last figure I saw was 8,286 blind readers. I liken this to a small rural community with one grocery store. For the customers of that store is vital. And that's the way I feel about the Talking Book Library. To share one example, I happen to be quite interested in an ongoing story about the Hubble telescope. Well, an astronomer wrote a book about that, and it was very interesting. I got a lot of information about it. It was satisfying. And there's no way that I could have gained that information if it wasn't for the Talking Book program. I might add, too, that on the council, I represent the senior citizen population. And as seniors age, have less options in their life, and particularly for those that might be housebound or bedridden, the Talking Book program may not only be the major source of information and recreational reading, but perhaps the only source. And so I come before you asking for your help and your support on this program that's really quite vital for myself and many other people. I would call your attention going to another subject about the staffing and funding of this library. We have currently, I think, 10 FTEs. The state of Washington has 7, this goes back to 1997, 17.8. You'll notice that in the budget we had, I think, 44% of the staff is made up of volunteers. And to me that's an extraordinary high number. And I don't know of any other state agency that is required to have over 40% of its staff in volunteer service. Certainly not the Department of Motor Vehicles or Children's Services or the Attorney General's Office or Department of Revenue. And I would like to see that figure dramatically reduced. I would like to see our volunteers used for special programs and enhancements rather than just ongoing day-to-day operations. So on behalf of a lot of blind people and the staff of this library, I would ask you to provide additional funding and authorization for staff in addition to what the governor's office has presented. I think they wanted a 0.75 increase. I'm asking you to provide more than that. And I thank you.
Certainly thank you. Any questions of Mr. Cunningham? Well, sir, we thank you again very much for coming and sharing your thoughts with us. We
thank
appreciate
you for allowing me to talk to you.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
And by the way, I must tell you that I do live in a small community of 700 people with one grocery store. So that's exactly what you're saying.
Well, I lived in one in Montana. And for the townspeople there, we have a grocery store. It's a vital source. It's more vital than if you were in a larger community with choices, is the point I'm trying to make. And we, the blind population, do not have choices when it comes to reading material, both for leisure and for information. This is one source and it's extraordinarily vital to us. So I do hope you support it.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Okay. Is it Frank Sinoground or Sinoground?
Sinoground.
Sinoground, okay. Please come forward. Thank you, Mr. Sinoground, for taking the time to come in here today. If you would please state your name for the record.
My name is Frank Sinoground, and I am an avid user of the services of the Talking Book and Braille system, a member of the Advisory Council, and on the council, actually, I represent the Oregon Commission for the Blind, of which I'm a program manager for the Oregon Commission for the Blind. I assure you that I've taken vacation time today to be here. So.
The taxpayers appreciate that.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to make that point. I presume I came into the room a bit late, so I presume that most everybody that has testified has talked about the personal use and how important it is to individuals, as it is to me. I was always an avid reader, and when my ability to read print got to the point where I just couldn't do it any longer, I was very pleased to discover at that time the Talking Book and Braille library system. What I would like to talk about that is a bit different is that as the program manager for the Elder Blind Program for the Oregon Commission for the Blind, that's the one thing that we hear the most when we talk to our older blind consumers is how much they appreciate this service that we, the Blind Commission, provides, which is the Talking Books. And, of course, we thank them and kind of quietly say that we really don't provide that. It's the Talking Book and Braille library system that that is an absolute constant, and many of these folks are people that their only access to reading materials is through that direct mail of books. They otherwise would be unable to get out to the public libraries, where certainly one can get books, but not in the same fashion that they need. So it gives them the one viable alternative for recreational reading and informational reading that they can do independently. It doesn't require anybody else's help to be able to do that, other than the mailing of the materials and the post office handling that. I would hope that the program continues to be funded at the level it has been funded. I not only am a user, but I have donated to the fundraising that the library does, with the idea that, those donations go to the special projects and things that the state does not fund, and probably for good reasons cannot fund. But I would hate to think that that the library would be forced to use that money to run the regular program rather than the extra activities that they now do, such as the descriptive videos. Thank you.
Senator Lynn is recognized.
Since I don't know thing about the Talking Books, how does it work? Is it like a tape or listen tape? Well, could you explain to me what the talking? I never seen it. I don't know.
I left my mind in the van. I could have demonstrated it, but the Talking Books. Books are recorded in entirety. They're not abridged. They're recorded on standard cassette tapes, but they're recorded at half speed and in such a fashion that there are four tracks rather than two tracks. So instead of 1 hour, you get, I believe, about 4 hours of audio description or, the Talking Books narration on one tape. It requires a special player that is also provided by the library, and you can listen to it out loud or with earphones.
That's a picture.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Frank, do they do any type of regular news
programming in this talking book program.
Yes. I take, for instance, Newsweek, and I get the date, the cover date on Newsweek is for Monday. I get my Newsweek either Saturday or on Monday every week. So the lag time is, you get it just almost as soon as the person can get it off the stand. And I listen to that while people are sitting reading the newspaper and the book on their way to work. I've got my little tape player under my arm and my earphones plugged in, and I'll sit and listen to Newsweek to and from work, and so I can get through the news every week that way. And there are some other books available on, or magazines that are available on tape, and they're actually going to tape more so. The books are provided by the federal government. The machines are provided by the federal government, but the distribution system is the responsibility of the state.
Senator Trust?
He just asked a question I was going to ask about how they had access to them, whether there were other magazines besides Newsweek that you could have access to. I just want to indicate how pleased I am with this program and your testimony about it and that of the other people who testified about this program. And it's a wonderful thing. That's cooperative. We talk about partnerships, and there are all kinds of partnerships. But it is a partnership with the federal government and the state and with individuals who have a real need. And I just hope that we can continue this program and expand its use, because it certainly is a very important program.
It's certainly important to me.
Frank, I have another question for you in regards to listening to the tape on a special recorder and on using four tracks. Ken, if you were listening to an edition of Newsweek, would you be able to skip programs if you didn't want to listen to a particular article but you wanted to move ahead to another one? Do they, at the beginning of the tape, do they kind of give you a synopsis of the articles that will be covered so you can kind of pick and choose?
On Newsweek, they do, I can, and I do.
Okay.
They list for each side of the table of contents are listed, and when your machine is in fast forward, you'll hear a tone, a beep, when you've come to the beginning of the next article.
I see.
Yeah. So let's say you're taking Playboy for those people that only want to listen to the article. And that is most of it, right?
Well, now that brings me to my next question.
He's going to bring himself in.
No, we certainly appreciate you coming forward today. Are there any further questions? All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
All right. I think we need to move next to Mr. David Becker. Welcome, sir, and for the record, please state your name.
My name is David Becker, and I live in Salem, Oregon. I'm a resident here. I just wanted to give my comments about Playboy and so forth. Well, really, my two magazines that I take are American Heritage and the National Geographic. And to me, they're the most wonderful editions I could ever ask for. But I'm a Korean War veteran, and I was drafted here from the Salem Draft Board in 1951. I was severely injured on Heartbreak Ridge. Out of that, I lost my eyesight. I do have still travel vision, but I have been a user of the State Library for the Blind for almost 30 years, and I'm telling you, it's been such an important part of my life. I love biographies, autobiographies, and so forth. And they have done such wonderful service for me. I just can't tell you enough. When I heard that possibly we might lose some money and some of these special funds would have to be used for our program, I mean, that's why I'm here. I'm pleading that we get our due amount that they've asked for, because it means so much. I have done for my country all that I could, and I think that we as the Blind Library does so much that they can for the visually impaired, and they do a wonderful job. But anyway, that's all I have to say, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
Mr. Guthrie, we appreciate that Senator Lynn is recognized.
Yes, it's not a question that the that I do appreciate the service you have done to the Korean people, and that you have done a good job. Many American young soldiers were killed and wounded, and I just want to appreciate the service you did since I come from Korea.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. We appreciate you coming today. Okay, next we have a trio of individuals that would like to testify together, and that would be Toby Porter, Jody Westerman, and is Sarah, is it Charlton? Okay, please speak from court, all three of you. That's fine. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Sarah Charlton. I'm the president of the Oregon Library Association, and I am from Tillamook County. I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 5524 for the State Library Budget. The Ready to Read money, which we're going to show you some samples of in just a few minutes, the money comes through the State Library, and it's associated with many projects throughout the libraries in Oregon. As director of the Tillamook County Library, I have witnessed many of these wonderful projects coming through my library. One we have done since 1993, every baby born in Tillamook County has a copy of the children's classic Goodnight Moon in either English or Spanish, depending on the choice of the parents. We urge them to come to the library, and hopefully we can get them addicted to books in the beginning, so when they get to kindergarten, they are ready to learn. Some of the statistics are 3 out of 10 children in Oregon are not ready to learn by kindergarten. And public libraries are getting involved to stop that. We're getting the kids right at birth. And I can honestly say to them, look, we start library patrons the day they're born. I'm very proud about that. We've also started in 1993 a college program for toddlers. Children 18 months to 36 months come to the library with their parents, and they get involved learning books, learning how to socialize with other kids. It's wonderful. We always have a waiting list for this program. We have it throughout the year, and it's amazing how people call to see when the next program is and how soon they can register their child. Another project I've seen in our county, we have Stories to Go. It's an outreach project we made for daycare centers, in-home daycares that cannot come to the library because they have too many children to take care of. And it's basically a bag of everything from books, toys, objects for the children to learn together. And this has been very well received and one of our most popular programs in Tillamook County the past 3 years. Last year, Tillamook, we just had $4,300 to spend, and we funded 4 different programs, and it has been wonderful for our county. As president of the Oregon Library Association, we are asking for an increase. Right now, it's 75 cents per child, and that doesn't seem a lot, but we, all librarians, take it a long way. And we're asking $1 per child, and that's $1 for every child in the county. And that will maybe give us about $5,300, and what we can do with that is just incredible. And our goal is to reach the young children so they can be ready to read. Most of them hopefully can learn local reading as they go. The other thing I'd like to talk about what the State Library does is they assist public libraries so many ways. The federally funded Library Service and Technology Grant that passed through the State Library. I've had the honor of being on the advisory committee for 3 years, and they approved many wonderful projects for libraries throughout the state of Oregon. Three I have seen on the term I was on. The Oregon School Library Information System that funded databases for the high schools in Oregon. I think there's about 100 now receiving money from that. Another really innovative project that came up a couple of years ago was Books by Rail. That was a Hillsboro public library having a library right next to Light Rail. So busy people, as they came and went to work, they could pick up a book, video, whatever they wanted. That was very popular. And one of the joys I got to see, being on the advisory committee, was seeing the first public library in Sherman County. They did a public library with the local high school. And that was one of the goals of the state library, to make sure public libraries are in all the counties. And that was a joy to see that one come about. I want to thank you for letting me come testify today. And I want to introduce the entertainment to my right here. Toby Porter is director of the Port Alford and Langlois Libraries, and Bernie Westerman, who's in charge of outreach services to children for the Cedar Mill Community Library. And they're going to talk about and show and tell really what Ready to Read is all about. Okay, Jody.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jody Westerman, Children's Outreach Librarian for Cedar Mill Community Library in Washington County, and I'm here today to speak to the issue of increasing the Ready to Read funds in the state library budget. I'd like to tell you a little bit about how the funds have been used for the Cedar Mill Library in order to do some concrete things that would assist children in being ready to read and ready to learn when they enter school. The program that I take care of at the library is called the Bookshare Program. And what the Bookshare Program does is it takes books and story times into family child care homes so that we offer a model of training child care providers on how to select and how to read books to young children who are infants, preschool age, and toddlers. I'm only one person. I can't do this alone. So part of the Ready to Read money supports me in being able to train volunteers so that we're able to reach more children and more child care providers. So our volunteers go into the homes once a month, read for a half hour with the provider there observing so that they have the opportunity to see how it can be done. And then we leave the box of books, which is 50 books, as you see down on the floor in front of the table here. That box of books is left for the children to be able to use with the child care provider during that month. There are a number of reasons we decided to start this program in our small section of Washington County. One is that the children are in child care. They're in child care, many of them, 5 days a week. And we have an audience sitting there with child care providers that we can reach and help them become ready to go to school if we can get the resources in the hands of the child care providers. With the help of the Ready to Read funds, we've been able to do this through the Cedar Mill Library program. According to the Oregon Child Care Division, in Washington County alone, there are over 1,300 family child care providers. And there are over 150 child care centers. There's an audience sitting there waiting for us to go and get them ready to go to school. And as public libraries, we are the institution, the public institution, that takes care of the literacy and learning needs of children who are not yet school age. This is an important goal for us. Washington County Commission on Children and Families, about a year ago, called for a study to be done to evaluate the readiness of children as they enter kindergarten. What they found is that in the area of emerging literacy skills, that 51% of the children were not ready to begin the process of getting ready to read if they entered kindergarten. And one of the major problems they discovered is that children were not being read to regularly in their homes or in child care places. That's an impact that we've tried to have on the number of centers and five family child care providers that we're able to reach. In 1996 and 1997, we were able to serve 26 child care sites and reach 343 children. Because we had an increase in ready-to-read funds up to 75 cents the following year, we were able to increase the number of child care sites to 46 and reach almost 650 children through our program. The ready-to-read funds pay for the materials, they pay for the training for the volunteers, all of the support that's required, and that little red backpack you see down there is the second part of the program that we were able to develop the second year, which is a bag of books, three books, that go home with the children to their families so that we're getting to the family so that they're reading to the children and going beyond the child care provider. It's only through the help of the Ready to Read funds that we're able to take these materials to the child care providers and get them to the hands of the children and the families. Those are the numbers. They tell you a little bit about what we're able to do in our corner of the world for the children. But it's really the stories that I hear from the volunteers and the child care providers that tell us a little bit more about the impact that we're having. when I have a volunteer come back from doing a home visit, and they say they were greeted at the door by the children who dropped everything that they were doing and ran to the door yelling, "It's the story lady or the story man. This is better than Christmas." You know we're having an impact. When I have a child care provider who says, "Before my children would take a nap, I would pop in a video. Now I read to them." We know we're having an impact. When I have a child care provider who has a volunteer go in for the first time and she's so nervous about the children touching books that she has them all lined up in high chairs so that she can have control of them, we know we have a challenge.
Yes, indeed.
And by the time that first session is over, the volunteer has all of those children down on the floor, engaged with her in reading the stories and having their hands on the book, we know we've made an impact. And when that same provider has a reading corner set up within 3 months so that the children can have access to the books throughout the day, we know we make a difference. This is what the Ready to Read grant does for the children in the Cedar Mill service area. And I encourage you to support public libraries and continue to making this possible in a variety of ways throughout the state so that we can have our children ready for school when the time comes. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody. Any questions, Jody? All right. Thank you very much.
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Toby Porter, and I'm the director of the Langlois and Port Orford Public Libraries, located in North Curry County on the southern coast. I was asked by the Curry County Library Network not to be confused with a CCLN, because I wouldn't use that. I was asked by that organization to speak for all five independent public libraries in Curry County as we address this important issue today of the Ready to Read grant. The Chetco Public Library in the city of Brooklyn receives the largest Ready to Read grant. That's $1,992 to serve 2,304 children. Director Susanna Fernandez states, and I quote, "The grant is the incentive to think of new projects outside our budget," unquote. And indeed, that's just what they do. Each year they were able to provide both a special collection and programs that enhance the curriculum of a growing segment of their young patrons, the homeschool child. This grant is used also every year to cover the transportation costs that are incurred by their children's librarian as she visits weekly 6 daycare centers. Weighing in with a Ready to Read grant of $958 to serve 865 children is the Curry Public Library in the town of Gold Beach. Their librarian is very dedicated to the library's belief that early exposure to books is important. For 3 years, above and beyond her normal work week, she voluntarily visited child care centers to read and display and do crafts. When the library received its first state grant a number of years ago, it was used to cover the cost of that very well-established outreach program, and that was before outreach programs even were a concept. This year, Curry Library started a last-sit story time for infants and created something they call the baby bag. And I have an example down there. It's a bag, and inside are new books for the baby and a book on parenting for the parents. And this was given to parents so that their new books can come with books right from the beginning. The third largest public library in Curry County, Port Orford, received a $599 Ready to Read grant this year to serve 412 children. Over the years, this grant has been used for such diverse children's services as a story time involving senior citizens working with the little kids to a purchase of bilingual materials for the growing Latino population. And I have a couple of examples of the books on the floor, but this one I want to hold on to because you would approve of this, Joey. It has a real stamp of approval. It has teeth marks in the top. Very popular. And our Agnes Community Public Library, the smallest library serving the largest geographical area, uses their $429 in a Ready to Read grant to make sure their 30 children have the most basic of library services. They buy a few new books, and they provide a summer reading program.
I would hope that you would be able to invite librarian Shepke to come to the Agnes Library, giving that wonderful tour up the river.
Up the river.
And have him come and see those books.
Because that's
one library he hasn't made it to yet.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I'm glad to know that. I'll talk to Deborah and wish you that.
Good. Great.
Well, they do have a wonderful director there, Deborah Krause, and she says, and she wanted me to make a point of quoting this to you, so, quote, "The grant makes the unthinkable possible. It is money allocated just for kids, money that is not available when every penny must be spent on essentials just to keep the library running," unquote. The challenge at Langhorne Public Library has always been, what's the biggest program we can create with a ready-to-read fund? This year, the library received $256, up from $175 when I first began, to serve 138 kids. The Langhorne Library has won two awards from the Oregon State Library for our excellence in children's programs, programs that were funded by the Ready to Read grant. One, called House Calls, involves tailoring the contents of a bin to meet a specific need. Designed with a child care provider in mind, not unlike what you do on a smaller scale, though, the program makes it possible for library personnel to actually visit the site, if requested, and work with a child care provider to teach healthy and safe ways for children and adults to creatively learn, read, and play together. In summary, I believe the numbers speak for themselves. In 1998-99, $4,234 grant dollars allowed a significant expansion of services to nearly 4,000 children in Kerr County. These dollars help children get ready to read. These dollars help ensure our future. Just think what we could do with 25 cents more per kid, but I won't mention it. Thank you very much for your time today, and on behalf of the five public libraries in Kerr County, I thank you for your support. It's been very important. Thank you for the support in the past.
Ms. Sherry, have any of you got any material that would show what this has done to the students as they get into the school system?
I have data from Mr. Chair and Representative Medley. I have data that I think might support what you're speaking to. I don't know that I could substantiate any kind of academic improvement necessarily, but I could certainly substantiate involvement in the amount of materials those children check out, and also in the attendance at programs we offer. One was, in fact, a storytelling workshop, and some of the kids who took advantage of our early programs then went on to become storytellers, and this was another ready-to-read grant, and they went on to train and learn how to read stories, and they now read to the little kids in preschool. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I do have the data to support that. I'd be happy to supply it to you.
Okay. And how long has this program been in place?
The Ready to Read grant?
I have a question. You mentioned a subject that's very, very dear to my heart, and that is homeschooling.
Yes.
In my little school district of where I live, Central Lynn School District, 60% of our children that are school age for public school attend public school, which means 40% are either in private school or being homeschooled. And this is a trend that I'm seeing in several of my rural districts. And it's really important to me that your services are available to them. If this trend continues, then there will be a greater need, and I'm sure that you're recognizing that, obviously.
One of our projects back in 1995-96, we did a homeschool project, and we purchased materials just for the homeschool children, and we did a bibliography just for the homeschool. In Tillamook County, we have a bookmobile, and we do stop at the local homeschools because they have a lot of farms in Tillamook. And that's how we support that way. But the Ready to Read grant did a wonderful job of bringing in the books that normally we would not buy because we do not really buy curriculum books. But we bought quite a bit for the homeschool that year, and that the money we received was about $3,000 that year.
I see. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Further questions for this panel?
We want to thank you all very much, and thank you for bringing the wonderful props and entertainment here.
Now we get to pack them up.
Thank you.
Well, when the coast is clear, Representative Patridge, please come forward and share your thoughts with us.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Rob Patridge, representing House District 50, which comprises the city of Medford and is located in Jackson County. I'm here today to testify on behalf of what's in front of you as policy package number 101, which is on page 46 and 47 of the what you've been given in regards to the Ready to Read grant program. You know, you've heard a bunch of testimonies. You also see some books about what children are doing. First, I wanted to share with you some statistics that I've had an opportunity to look at. First, I'd like to point out that Oregon is 43rd in the nation in terms of its per capita spending that goes towards public libraries. We spend about 13% per capita compared to a much larger national average of about $1.32. You've heard the good things about the Ready to Read programs that are available out there. I'm very committed. If there's anything that we can do to help youth in the state of Oregon to deter crime in the long term, it's giving children the ability to read. In a recent Newsweek article that I've got a copy of, I did not bring copies for the committee, in regards to brain research, the date is February 19, 1996. The conclusion that was come to as a result of the studies that were presented with infants and toddlers showed that they gave with the right input at the right time, almost anything is possible for these children. But if you miss a window of teaching children to read, children are playing with a handicap for the rest of their lives. And a study recently released by the University of Birmingham, Alabama, in which 400 children were tracked who were given library cards and who read for a half hour each day for 5 years. They were given baseline tests when they entered kindergarten, and it was found that they were two levels above their contemporaries in their overall skills. Our public libraries give large access to a large group of our population. Our libraries are well utilized in Oregon. We rank third in the nation in per capita in the circulation of books and other materials from public library. Every day, over 80,000 books are checked out from Oregon's 130 public libraries throughout the state of Oregon. I'm here today to urge you to adopt the policy package number 101 and not fund at the 75 cents as recommended, but fund at the $1. The cost of this is about $350,000. As we sat today and debated the merits of phonics on the House floor, I think it didn't matter how you got there, but I think the whole House was in agreement that reading and teaching children to read early are of high public importance. I came to this legislature from the district attorney's office, where we had dealt with a lot of the people that we dealt with later on in the criminal justice system at substantial cost, where could not read, and many of them could not read. I'm asking and urging you to support the additional 25 cents per child. It's money well spent ahead of time. I went to Willamette University across the street. I every day had an opportunity to walk back and forth to the library or to class. And there's a clock tower over there, and if you get a chance to walk on the Willamette campus, I would urge you to do so. Coming from the DA's office and other things that we've seen and many of you have seen across the course of your life, Senator Hatfield, it's the Marco Hatfield Library, and Senator Hatfield, the quote that's etched at the bottom of the clock tower is, "Knowledge is the preface of peace." I believe that that is true, both domestically and abroad. I believe we can decrease crime rates. I believe that we can
make people get along better if we invest on the front end. And here we look at the birth of the three types of programs that have broad-based support. We're trying to get to 50% by the end of this next biennium. If we're going to put resources towards these children, put it towards these types of programs like Ready to Read at 25 cents. It's not a lot to ask at $350,000 that puts kids two grade levels ahead to do things like that. Jackson County, just to share with you some statistics from Jackson County, got a $25,000 grant, and the number of kids who participated in their Ready to Read program was 20,000, over 20,000 children. They're going to target Head Start and High Need Elementary School during this next year. With part of this money, they've helped put on 332 programs serving 10,488 children, as well as the story time programs and reading to children. That is 662 story times and 12,659 children attended. Those are big figures that you get lots of leverage from in the future for just a small amount of money.
I just wanted to commend Jim Patridge for his remarks and also to indicate that I certainly agree that an addition to this program would be very beneficial. There's no question about that. Also wanted to comment about Senator Hatfield. I think there was no one in the United States Senate who did more to serve libraries than Senator Hatfield did. And my guess is probably the federal money that we see in these programs is largely due to his work. I just wanted to mention that. Thank you quite much, and I thought, gee, how appropriate that was.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Patrick, you're going to be a father soon in the coming few months. I'm assuming that you will be reading to your child at a very early age.
I do, and I use my library card to go buy books on tape as I drive back and forth to the legislature. I am very supportive of our local libraries. I grew up in them. I participated in the kids' reading programs growing up, and for me, that wasn't too long ago. So.
Representative Hanson has a question for you. You're not off the hook.
All right.
Good question, but I think it's only fair when people come. What would you suggest for revenue enhancements in terms of funding for $350,000? Where would you like to find the money?
Where would I like you to find the money? I think that you have to look at that within your committee. In terms of what you're doing, I'm looking at it in my committee next door. I'm over here for a minute. I probably have to carve out the $350,000, but I haven't looked at your budget in particular. But
well, if you get to keep any of the money, we'll cut it, do you?
I think that that's the understanding, that the committees can keep within them a lot of the money. So that's the hope. You know, we're talking about a lot of money for education and the dollars that are driving education, but just think how much easier it would make a teacher to have children that could already read and do some of those things when they got there. That's what public libraries offer. Those are offered to resources to parents who sometimes can't afford them. And I said that, you know, we were told now that Representative Croft has announced that my wife is pregnant, we're supposed to do the reading in the womb thing. So that's what the new research is saying at 3 months old. So
there you go.
Those are important things.
My good friend and leaderless Representative Leonard is recognized.
Well, just to kind of build on what the person was saying, it's real frustrating for me particularly to sit on this committee, then I sit on the education subcommittee for Ways and Means, and I sit on Four Ways and Means with you, and each of these requests are justified in and of themselves. I mean, I don't know that I've heard one request in K-12 funding or the community colleges or the university level that didn't make complete sense. Each one of them, however, requires revenue enhancement. And I slightly listen to citizens as they come forward because they make cases for the particular program they're interested in, and I'm part of the bigger package. You, however, are a member of this body and know some of the dynamics that are occurring here. So, I am interested in knowing specifically what you would I mean, because you are over here on this side.
Well, I just cut, we just cut 14% out of the employment department's budget this morning. We're faced with some of the same things.
Yeah.
I guess it's just a matter, to me, it's just a matter of trying to prioritize what's most important and what's going to be of the longest term benefit. As I sit in the public safety ways and means and look at the corrections budget and I think about how much it costs to house prisoners every day and how much it costs to fund the 100 state police that people are asking for. And I think that some of those things are driven by the fact that, and I truly believe that a lot of those things are driven by the fact that children can't read. So, and adults can't read ultimately. So, you know, you may not see the immediate effect overnight, but, you know, growth, we can always ask for more. And there's billions of dollars worth of worthy programs out there. It's just a matter of what the proper government function and I think access to education and knowledge in the form of libraries is crucial.
Any further things for our good friend and
I'll be looking at your budget. I'll send you a message.
Thank you.
We appreciate your
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to come forward and share their thoughts? Yes, sir, please come forward. And when you get up here, state your name.
I'm on the list.
You are. Did I miss you?
Bill C.
I did miss you, Bill. My sincere apologies. Okay, I apologize.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am part of the 44% along with my wife. I'm a volunteer at the Braille Library. We got involved because about 20 years ago, my mother, who was blind...
Would you please state your name for the record? I'm sorry to interrupt you. We have to have that.
Yes, I'm Bill C. S-E-A, like the ocean.
Thank you, sir.
Usually people have trouble with short names, as you can imagine. We got involved in this about 20 years ago. My mother was blind, and she belonged to a library for the blind. Found it very helpful. In fact, as one of the earlier gentlemen mentioned, they send you a list every so often, and you check off the list of books that you'd like to have. And every once in a while, they'll slip in an extra book that you didn't ask for. She talked to me one day when she was about 92 years old, and she said, you know, I find so much in these talking books. I've learned more about sex at my age. Aside from that, we have 10 employees over there, and if we're 44% of that as volunteers, if we who travel a lot when we're retired all took off at the same time, your Braille library would be out of business. I request that you think strongly about this funding and remain with the amount of money that that has been allotted for it. It looks to me, if we have 40-some thousand visually handicapped people in the state, that we're only spending about 4 cents a day on each one of these people. Can't buy a Coke for 4 cents anymore. Can't buy a newspaper for 4 cents anymore. If you can't read, it sure helps to have a talking book. It seems to me that this 0.75 persons that are going to be allocated in the new budget should be at least rounded off to a whole person and make it 11. If Washington State has 17, we could, I would think, justify a few more than we have. I rest my case. I know all of you think about it, and I know money is tough, but there are people that can't take care of themselves that need to be watched out for. And if we don't do it, I don't know who does. Thank you very much.
Mr. Key, how long have you been volunteering doing this?
I did some recording for a while, and I've been working in the warehouse. It's actually shifting the little green boxes around. Senator Lynn should go over and look at these little green boxes that have the tapes in them. We pass through about 2,500 a day come through, in and out. And it's a pretty nice system that's set up, and it's pretty efficient. And everyone should get by and take a look. You've heard the people that use the books, and I know your influence. Thank you for your time.
Where is the facility? For?
Right here in the state building, right?
It is.
Right there. Where all the reworking is being done.
I see.
So if you can imagine.
Do you record the books over there also?
I have done some recording. Right now I'm just doing warehouse. Okay. My wife and I do warehouse work now. We're just starting in and out. You work like crazy to try and get it all done because there is more work coming in now than really can be handled by the crew that you've got over there.
Well, we certainly appreciate your volunteerism. That is to be greatly admired. One of the marvelous things about our country that unfortunately we don't see in other countries throughout the world is the level of individuals who are willing to pitch in and help their communities and in many, many ways. And this is certainly one that's extraordinarily important. Representative Leonard and I are fellow firefighters, and we both believe very strongly in public safety. And there are a few things that come close to equating the public safety in my mind other than reading. It is extraordinarily important to the future in many ways. So we appreciate, again, your giving of your time and your life. It's very admirable. And to all the many, many people who give of their time and volunteers, I'm deeply impressed with the level of commitment there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to come forward and share some thoughts with us today? Well, we thank you all very much, and at this point in time, we'll close the public hearing. And we want to move to work session now, or we'll move to the returns. How would you like to accomplish that?
We can do it either way, actually. I can go check with him. You can go on the roof.
Yeah, he actually talked to me.
Okay.
During the lunch break, and I think, did he talk to you? I think I'm fine with what he's proposing. I'm going to discuss that with Mr. Kirchner.
I think we should. Why don't you ask him if he'd like to call us? We're just going to reset. Okay. We're going to go ahead and get started and then I'll come back in. It's a 10 cross league for the week. We have a work session on Senate Bill 5524. And, Madam, if you'd be so kind as to lead us through the crosswalk.
Okay. I have given you a package. It has a crosswalk. I'm mainly going to stay to the total, but it has broken it down by section. I'm going to walk you through that. Under the approved budget, we have a the net cost on the 1997-99 position actions. The total is $116,518. Estimated cost of merit increase is $67,519. The vacancy factor was a minus 4,030. Non-fixed personal services was 2,931. There were no phase-ins or phase-out. Inflation was 278,189. We have state government service charges of a minus 78,660. And there is a base annual base adjustment of a minus 29,642. And this leaves the current service level of 11,022,726. Would you like to take a vote?
We have a recommendation on behalf of Legislative Fiscal Office that we approve the current service level of 11,022,726. Are there any objections to that level of current service level?
What changes are there in the governor's budget? Is that basically the governor's budget, or what changes would be coming up?
Well, this is the current service level, and then you, of course, you would have the packages.
Okay.
But we start with the base budget up above.
So this is the current service level as the governor determined?
Yes.
Okay.
Are there any objections to the current service level as recommended by the governor? And we'll go ahead and approve this at that level.
The program option packages, there are three packages here. Package 102 is $45,030. It's for increased staffing of 0.075 FTE. And what I want to say is that 0.75 FTE came from the library development portion, or no, excuse me, library services, and they actually had transferred that, which is the package 103, so these kind of go together. They, in that, for funding that package, what they did do is they shifted some funds around. They took $29,642 above the current service level line, and it was, this was the inflation cost for the ready-to-read program, and they took that general fund and decreased that, and that's because they're trying to get enough general fund to fund this package. The other thing they did is they took $15,388 in general funds from the TBAB state government service charge inflation, and they shifted that from general funds to other funds, so they once again had the total of $45,030 for this package, which they funded, you know, within their current service level. They ultimately had reduced the current service level to fund this. And as I mentioned on package 103, that was the shift to have a position for package 102. In package 105, it's a purchase of assistant furniture. They have, they've done extensive remodeling over there, and it's been, I think, decades since they've had any kind of remodeling. And they're trying to be as efficient as they can in space, because they have to pay rent over there. And so what they are requesting, and this is actually one of two purchases, the current purchase they are funding within their budget this biennium. This is an additional purchase of $93,000. They had requested $93,000 on this particular item. And on this came down to the governor's recommended budget of $11,160,756. When I'm looking at my recommendation, there were a couple of things I had to do right off the beginning. One was look at the AG cost and reduce that, because we'd had a reduction from $92 to $90. And as you can see, that was a minus $58 total for other funds. Then I had to look at 4% reductions and the general fund portion of this particular budget. And as I mentioned yesterday, I went through each section and I looked at the general fund line item by line item, and I have to say that this is a very, very tight budget. And very difficult. So as you'll notice in my recommendation below, there is not an actual 4% as stated reduction. What I did recommend is on package 102 is to take that particular package, which is a general fund request, and as a general rule, I've been denying general fund requests. And so what I did do with this particular package is I recommended that it be shifted from general fund to go ahead, and it actually says on the crosswalk, it says deny, but I do mean it should say approve, because I'm recommending we approve this package but shift it to other funds. That way you accomplish a 2.6% reduction in the general fund, and this package actually is funded through another means, which is other funds. The last item was on package 105, which this is the systems furniture, and that they had given me another firm estimate the other day on what it was going to cost to purchase what's remaining, and it's $71,305. And so this reduction in here is $21,695 is the difference between what they requested and what they actually feel it's going to cost. And on this particular package, they are going to make every attempt to pay for as much of this package in this biennium with any savings that they may be able to boil away, which they will do, I'm sure, and try to pay for as much of this package as they can. So what I'm recommending also is that we unschedule this particular package, because I think that they are going to attempt to pay for at least portions of it in this biennium. And then that way, gas can schedule it as we, once they find out how much money they really are going to need in the upcoming biennium to purchase the balance of the equipment or the system furniture.
Just Karen, what would be the amount then of the net of the $93,021,695 that would be unscheduled?
$71,305 would be unscheduled.
Sure. One of the things with underfunding the budget and thinking if they can squirrel away money to handle the problem, I think for one thing it does say that, you know, this is a well-administered program and they can do that. But I think there is going to be other underfunding of all these budgets probably when the salary package comes, which is not... There's not adequate money in the budget to fund the salary package that we probably will get. Maybe not, but we probably will get one that will have to be funded in part through the agency budget. And so then how do you do that plus this? Do you figure that out?
Yeah.
Senator Schultz, that's one reason why I was going to schedule this money,
yeah.
Because they may or may not have adequate savings to do it. Okay. But
when you say you unschedule it, what do you mean?
Unscheduling means that it's actually approved, but it's approved. They can send the money once they go to Department of Administrative Services and get approval.
Okay.
And actually, it's joined, at my understanding, it comes to both of us, the LFO analyst and the BAM analyst.
Okay.
And there's a quarter. And then and we both agree that you know, that amount is adequate.
I've got five on you, okay?
I bought actually cash to this.
Let's just say that it was the LFO, as she said, the LFO and the van analyst.
I would never say that about you. But and once we're in agreement, then DASM schedules that money, and then they can spend it. But if they do happen to pay for part of it this time, then they won't need that amount. There is one other issue too that on their based on uncertainty, there is money budgeted in there in professional services for a PDAS program of $5,140, and this particular money was used for contracted or budget for hiring temporary employees in the PDAS program, and that's kind of an uncertain situation. Hopefully they'll have full employment over there because they filled a lot of vacancies and their people tend to stay for long periods of time. So I would recommend that we go ahead and appropriate that money to the e-board, and then they can go to the e-board if they need that.
And which amount was that, Ms. Kane?
That's $5,140 in professional services.
Why do you have to send that the e-board for $5,000? I heard a testimony that depending on clinic programs and the volunteers, you know, they need someone there to work with.
One other direction that I was given is if there are areas of uncertainty that it may be appropriate to send it to the e-board as far as, you know, if there are funds that they may not be spending that way, that they would go to the e-board and request it.
Senator Lynn, we also have amounts that we don't know that we will incur, such as the Attorney General fees and those kinds of things, and that by sending that to the e-board didn't allow that expenditure to be made. It's still within the budget and given that opportunity. We've heard the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal Office Representative Hanson is recognized.
On package 102, could you walk through the other funds of the ocean, in terms of where those other funds are being generated?
Yeah.
I'm still a little concerned in terms of if that's the appropriate use for the donated funds.
Okay. They're in PBAT, go again, Hopkins Lutheran Braille Service. There are mainly two sources, according to Avis. That the one is the donations and the other is interest income. Interest income, I think, is only $11,500, so it's a very small portion of that. Those are the only two other funds within that particular program. There are, as Mr. Shetsu had indicated to me, there is another fund which is in, I think, an administration, which deals with the sale of old copies of things and that sort of thing, that he said that they sometimes use for other programs other than just administration. But as far as in the Talking Book and Braille service, those are the only two courses that at least the ADIS report indicates.
So, how much of those funds are we using in the Talking Book?
They have budgeted for this particular biennium $102,093 is what they have budgeted. And so then there would be on top of that the $45,030. But they have a certain amount budgeted already for other funds.
And they're increasing that by $45,000.
Yes, correct. And they are projecting, on the third page I kind of talked about the other funds and you know, using that for this particular package. They are going to end up with a balance of $209,268. And actually, I think that will probably be higher than that because they're running about 14% ahead of budget on their donations. And then there's the $11,500 in interest. And then they are projecting the $333,085 for a total of $553,853 of total donated funds for this upcoming biennium. So there is adequate revenue there to fund both this package and the $102,000 that they have budgeted for.
The problem I see, and it's not whether the funds are adequate because they're there.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a perception in the donation community that the funds are being sent for ongoing programs other than program enhancements or the endowment, that can have to pull the golden goose in terms of keeping the donations coming in. And I think that's a concern on any private type fundraising effort. Was there a discussion in terms of that perception?
Yes, we did talk about it, and that's one reason why I put the third page together, because some of the rationale, because I understand your concern with that particular issue. I kind of looked at the past practice for this particular fund. I looked at the statute. I looked at, you know, whether it was a formal endowment, which it is not a formal endowment. I also looked at their budget. And they had budgeted this particular buy-in $99,063, and I actually could have broke down in that particular third page about where it was budgeted, which, you know, we're looking at out-of-state travel, office expenses, telecommunications, and some of it is used for the person, the donations person that they have on staff. So I looked at the fact that they had budgeted in areas that were what I would call, you know, operating expenses or services and supplies. I looked at that. The other thing, too, the rationale in Package 102 was actually shifting the state government service charges, which is, to me, an operational expense. And they used a portion of that, at $15,388, to fund that package, to find adequate, you know, funding so they could get to the $45,030. And I also looked at some of the materials that they had sent out to their donors. And while not all of those items had indicated that they were using for operational expense, there were some that mentioned specific things like temporary help, parking for volunteers, purchasing of cassettes and recorders and new books. And so I looked at all of what their past practice was with this particular one. And I have to say, on the amount budgeted, to date, they haven't spent all of this money in this biennium, but it is budgeted and there is limitation there. So those are the things I looked at, and I understand their concerns and I understand your concerns in those areas.
I think we're all concerned. This is an excellent program that's very well managed. I pretty much accept you that if there was anything that I could do, magically, it would be to clone him and have him run lots of our agencies, because it is very, very well managed and very efficiently done. And the work that's being done is certainly labor of love. And Katie has noted for us, some of the endowment funds are used on a regular basis for these ordinary and necessary operating expenses. There's another issue, too, and that is that the building, they are going through some rather extensive remodeling. They have some lovely new furniture, and I think when we look at that, folks will be able to see that, you know, for a very small amount reduced from the actual operating portion of the endowment fund, they've been able to spruce it up and really look very good and prepare themselves for the next land. So I feel like that we're not when you look at the governor's recommendation on the actual current service level, and then where we're actually recommending, legislative official is recommending that we take this budget, we are very conservative, and we're not going to take any substantial cuts other than the shift of funds of I think it's a total of 2.17%. 2.6. Senator
Chair, I would wonder, for one thing, if we could hear from Mr. Shepke in terms of what he thinks the consequences of the budget would be for the agency if we accept these recommendations. I know he's on the spot because you know, you're operating on marching orders about cutting so much money out of budgets, and you're on the spot too. I'm not particularly happy with where we are with all these budgets, and especially with this one. I like to see us give decent budgets to state agencies that do such a good job, and this agency does a great job, and they don't have a very big budget to begin with. They have a pretty sparse budget, and they get by with not very much money. So that's why I'm really uncomfortable with this. And I think that you get in the way. I think it's very creative trying to create an endowment fund, but somehow or other, if we begin to use that fund for operating expenses, pretty much soon it's all gone, and they won't be able to raise anything else. That's my guess.
Mr. Shepke, would you like to respond? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, may I call Dave Sager up here to help me? I'm the word man, and he's the numbers man, so he helps me. Mr. Chair, what I'd like to say about using $45,000 of donation funds to fund Decision Package 102 is that we have tried in the past to not ever use our donations for what we term as operating expenses, with one exception. We have such a problem when our volunteers don't come in that we decided at the beginning of this donation program that we would use donation funds to bring in temporary workers, and it's usually St. Vincent de Paul workers, on an as-needed basis, and that we would use donation funds for that purpose. And that's the only use that we would define as operating the program. The things that you see, like travel and supplies and things, are related to the fund development position that we have. They're the expenses of that position. And so we have used money to fund temporary help. Now, recently, we had a complaint about that from Ms. Green, and you have her letter in front of you, and that caused us to go back to our Talking Book and Braille Services Advisory Committee, and we shared this concern with them, and they discussed it thoroughly, and they indicated in their meeting, and this was probably 5 or 6 months ago, that they did not wish the staff to bring forward any more requests for money for temporary staff. So So their thinking is that they don't even in the future want us to use donations even for that purpose. They didn't tell us, you know, how to deal with the problem, but they just told us that they agreed with Mrs. Green that this is not something that we should be doing with the donation fund. And so that, you know, that is our position today, that we don't wish in the future to have to use donation funds for any operating expenses. We use the donation funds to fund the fund development program, which involves a staff person and related expenses, solicitation expenses, printing and mailing, direct mail solicitation. We use the money to buy material that we can't get from the Library of Congress. That's what we define as an enhancement, not as an operations expense. And we use the money to build an endowment. Someday, we will come to you, and maybe next biennium, you know, if we get lucky and get a few bequests from these people that are now giving us, you know, $300-$500 a year, we may come to you 2 years from now with $2 million, $3 million in our endowment, and then we want to talk to you about using the interest on the endowment to help operate the program. At that point, we are very much interested in creating another source of revenue aside from the general fund for this program, and that's where we're trying to get with this. So my concern about using the $45,000 to fund the position is that it's not in sync with that strategy. It's not in sync with the board's thinking about what we should be using this money for.
Other questions or members of the committee?
I just, seems to me for the value that we're getting out of the program, we ought to be willing to step up to the plate for another $45,000 from the state and then use that private funds based on what I'm hearing. I'm as amenable to the suggestion, and I appreciate the creative attempt you're making to, and I, well, the Senator Crowe appreciates the position you're in, but hearing this, I wish there was another way we could get at it.
Mr. Chair. Yes, Mr. Fager.
Thank you very much for being with me. I just wanted to be clear about the proposal from the Legislative Fiscal Office and the role that that had in developing the governor's recommended budget to get to the point where we're at now. The governor developed a current service level for the entire state library based on standard current service level policies of inflation, phase-in, phase-out, et cetera. The governor recommended no additional general fund for the state library due to the lack of available revenues for enhancements. During the appeal process, the state library and the board felt that it was driving concerns for additional general fund in the Talking Book program, that they wanted approval to shift general fund from other portions of the state library to enhance the Talking Book and Braille program. And they were willing to offer current service level inflation dollars to do that. Because that is a policy issue that is rightly decided by the legislature, not the governor, we said that they could propose that in a policy package, but that the funding itself, the 45030, needed to be removed from the current service level and shown as a part of the FTE associated with the policy package itself. What the governor would have anticipated is that if in the eyes of the legislature, you don't want to approve the use of those funds for that purpose, since there were no other discretionary general fund dollars available, that those dollars would first revert back to the programs that they were originally budgeted for service level. And that's why yesterday I was very specific in explaining that there are no new dollars associated with this budget. It is all current service level. In addition to if those funds were reduced based on the LFO recommendation, the ready-to-read program inflationary dollars, which are represented by the 45030, would be reduced to zero. That is, the ready-to-read program wouldn't have any inflationary dollars. Also, when you fund shift off $45,000 of general fund budgeted dollars off to other funds, you are also displacing the other uses of those other fund dollars on the part of the library. So that really, we do end up with a situation that is double jeopardy. I would also point out, as Senator Tro pointed out, that what we expect agencies to be doing at this point in the biennium, because of the salary adjustment package, which we were unable to fully fund, we expect all state agencies to absorb fully one-third of their total dollar requirements for that salary adjustment increase. When you have that situation, you expect to find in agencies unspent dollars that are being held in reserve so that they can make sure that their salaries are paid through to the end of the biennium. And that's the situation we find ourselves in right now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Fager. One other concern that I have, and that is that we do have the Senate bill, which has been discussed with us today, and if there's any possibility of getting that Senate bill passed through to enhance the ready-to-read program, which that goes straight through so that it benefits the ready-to-read at an increase of a one-third from 75 cents per youngster in each community to a dollar on an annual basis. We're going to have to be very cautious with the general fund appropriation. So, just bring that to your attention. I don't want to risk. I'd like to think that whatever we're able to hold in reserves from the other budgets, we'd have sufficient left over for programs that are as worthy as this one is to be funded from any of the other reserves. And I don't know that we. I wish I could sit here today as Bill Gates and promise you that we're going to have lots of money left over when it's all done, but we're just, that's as important to me as trying to basically break even in the overall approach, because in fact the use of general fund from the last legislatively approved budget from $2,739,000 has gone from $2,739,000 to $2,749,000. It's a very tiny increase in general funds, and the other funds have increased considerably more than that. So, and federal funds, in alternative, federal funds have gone up modestly as well. So, we have, and that is without the benefit of the Senate package. It's not an easy decision to make. All we can do is certainly hope that we'll be able to get the Ready to Read program, which I know is very near and dear to the Oregon State Library folks, and we want to move on that as best we can as well. So.
Sure. I wonder if we couldn't just at least put the fourth session, the rest of the work session off until tomorrow. I'd like to study this budget a little bit, think about alternatives to what we might be able to go.
We have tomorrow. I think we've got a double up budget tomorrow. We're going to be with two very heavy duty budgets coming.
Yeah, I know. We're
another committee. Okay. I don't think the Senate's prepared to vote today.
Okay. So with that, then we will go ahead and recess this session and take it back at. We're not scheduled. Can we continue the process? Recess with the work session open without posting. Is that all right?
This is.
Yeah. Work session.
This is Thursday.
We are here tomorrow.
Oh, you can't do it.
You cannot.
Not for Monday. I'll have to
notice
it. I have to get it in today.
Can Mr. Chair, can we get into this first thing? Everyone get here promptly at 1 o'clock tomorrow and work on this immediately tomorrow and get this moved out.
We've got two fairly heavy-duty budgets tomorrow, so. But if we're in work session, can we go forward without the 36-hour post?
Yeah, if you're in work session, we can go forward.
Okay,
for the next
let's kind of do that. That's your recommendation, Representative Krupp. We'll go ahead and recess and reopen promptly at 1 o'clock tomorrow.
Of course, the chairman does have to say that.